Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollack Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack, we're here for you. 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. Today we're going to be talking about the Communication Decency Act. Ever heard of it? You know what it means? How does it apply? You know, when you look at the legalities and the ins and outs and the intricate legal details of Airbnb, of VRBO, it's absolutely fascinating legally. And so there was a seminal case that was decided by a California court December 29th, 2017, just recently, involving the Communication Decency Act and Airbnb. But let's set up the stage for Airbnb. So they have a, they're like an internet service provider. They have a website. They have a, they host. And they say they're not the true host, but they provide a mechanism for people to lease their property out short-term, long-term. And that's the dispute. And a lot of cities, like the city and county of Denver, want their tax money from that. But the dispute came into being because one of the biggest, largest entities that lease out real estate in the country is AMCO. So they would lease out a bunch of real estate, maybe houses in Denver, maybe houses in California on a short-term basis. And then the people who leased the properties would sublease it. And there's a provision that you can't sublease it. So one more time. So then AMCO would lease it to you, a house in Denver for a year. You'd turn around and sublease it to somebody else in violation of the lease. And so AMCO was having all these problems, complaints, property damage, noise, neighbor complaints. And they had to get security patrols. So they sued. And they said under the Communication Decency Act, Airbnb was violating that Communication Decency Act, among other causes of action. So, Brad, let's kind of explain to everybody how the Communication Decency Act kind of applies. One argument was they were a host, and the other argument that Airbnb was not a host.
Sure. There's a the Communication Decency Act actually was passed, I think, back in 95, 96, to address pornography and to try and get some control over pornography in the internet. And that that was struck down by our Supreme Court for the in violation of the First Amendment freedom of speech as it related to a great deal of the pornography or pornographic side of the act. The act still remains as it applies to exactly what we're talking about, publishing content that is going to lead to lies or is going to lead to criminal activity or is going to lead to, in this case, it's not really criminal activity, but violation of a lease terms that, in essence, it's communicating and it's allowing you to violate the lease terms. Because if I've got a lease and it says I can't sublease and I have an entity that is going to allow me under secrecy to advertise my unit to sublease it and to sublease it on actually a regular basis to different tenants, that's obviously in violation of what the landlord expected. And so there was an attempt to use the Communication Decency Act to address that, and it failed.
Right, but the argument was that under the Communication Decency Act, they weren't telling them who was subleasing it, and AMCO was upset because they had all these properties leased across the country. And then their tenants were subleasing it out through Airbnb, and Airbnb wouldn't tell them who the tenants were, and that sort of thing. The Communication Decency Act was also designed to protect providers of internet services, maybe like Facebook, maybe like Airbnb. And so the argument was, well, Facebook or Airbnb was the host, and since they were the host, they were responsible for the content. And the California court held that they were not responsible for the content. Isn't that fascinating? Airbnb sets up a website. They've got people leasing back and forth, paying money back and forth. Airbnb facilitates it. They don't give them any information. And then Airbnb says, we're not responsible for the content. We don't put the content up there. We just provide a mechanism. We just provide a website. We just provide a mechanism to do it. And so it's a fascinating case.
And if you want to control the content, you've got to go to the original publisher of the information. The question is, as we go further into this, this process in life is whether or not there's going to be ever a time when we're going to start saying who's got responsibility for controlling what content and what content can be put on the internet. In the meantime, You've got a huge question about how landlords or how owners of property can protect their property, and a huge question about how units can be reused or relet when they're being released. A lot of times, I think, for the sole purpose of being able to subsequently relet them and make money on short-term rentals.
Right. So let's say we have 200 houses in Denver, 200 facilities, 200 places, and a condo, house, townhome in Denver that have leases in full force and effect, long-term leases, a year, 2 years, and the lease says you can't sublet it, you can't let anybody else be in there, and they do it. And so they enter into a short-term lease over the weekend through Airbnb. And so they didn't, and Airbnb won't divulge who the tenant is, and so the people that own the property have to find out the hard way, meaning the sublessees, the people that come in for a weekend, destroy the property. They make noise. They make disturbances. The police are called. It's a fascinating deal. And also the Denver City and County of Denver got their hand into it because they wanted the tax money. And it was interesting to find out that $1.1 million in revenue just for the first 8 months of 2017 was generated in favor of the City and County of Denver by taxing this type or these type of transactions. $1.1 million in the first 8 months of 2017.
Now make no mistake. What these people are doing a lot of times is they're violating the lease that they signed with the original landlord. There's no question about that. Most leases have contracts or have provisions in them where subleasing is not permitted without the permission of the landlord. And you have to go through a great deal of processes for the landlord to be able to, or the owner of the property, to be able to control who's going to be using their property. So these subleasing agreements are illegal in a lot of ways. And when I say illegal, I don't mean crime. I mean they just violate the terms of the lease if, in fact, the person doing the sublease is a lessee themselves.
Right. So you're a huge landlord. You own maybe, let's say, 500 units. You lease them out on a long-term basis for a year. Then those people lease them out for overnight. And here's an interesting, fascinating question. What if the short-term tenant, the weekend tenant, won't leave? I mean, what if they won't leave? What's the legality? I mean, the more we got into this and the Communication Decency Act and how it was used and the legality of these transactions, it's absolutely fascinating. What if they won't leave and they damage property? And they were only supposed to be there for a weekend. Now we're there a month. And the tenant wants the property back. The landlord doesn't know what's going on. Absolutely fascinating. You can contact us at 303-713-8255, 713-8255. Today on our KOA show, hour long, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, 850 KOA, we're talking about if you're injured in a car crash and you're on the job at the same time, like a delivery person, maybe a FedEx driver, maybe a salesperson going on a sales call, maybe a pizza delivery person, maybe an insurance adjuster. And by the way, we've represented insurance adjusters in their own injury cases. Maybe an insurance adjuster going out to appraise the damage on a vehicle somebody called in. They're on the job. They have a car crash. What are the rights? What are the responsibilities? How does that work? Do you get workers' compensation benefits? Yes. Do you get a claim against the insurance company for the at-fault party, the one who rear-ended you and creamed you and sent you off to the emergency room? Yes. Can you do both? Yes. How does that work? You can listen to our show today at 10 o'clock on KOA, 850 AM, and you can hear all the details about that show. And about those subjects, also you can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. And it's an information-loaded website. All of our books are there. You can download our books, free e-copy. Our most recent book is The Definitive Guideline on Colorado Car Insurance. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. Bell and Pollock. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Here we go. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. The only show of its kind. 303-713-8255. We're going to answer your questions on any legal subject. We do it every week. 303-713-8255. Today from 10 to 11 on KOA 850 AM. We do our hour-long injury show. Today we're talking about injured on the job in a car crash. So you're maybe a delivery person, a salesperson. You're injured on the job, in the course and scope of your employment. Those are the magical legal words. That triggers workers' compensation coverage for you, the driver. Let's say you're driving. If you're in your own car, does it work? Yes. If you're in the company car or van, does it work? Yes. And so you have remedies under the workers' comp statute, but you need to know who your friends are and your enemies are in that playing field. You'll learn today from 10 to 11 on KOA. You can simultaneously and should make a claim against the at-fault party's insurance company. So you're driving on the job. You're up to at a stoplight. You get rear-ended. You get workers' compensation benefits. That's an entirely new, different world. And as we point out, workers' compensation is micromanaged, incredibly micromanaged. And there's not hundreds, there's thousands of statutory subparts, rules, and regulations governing what happens when you're injured on the job. Simple things, injured on the job, very complicated transactions with a lot of time deadlines. If you don't meet them, sometimes you can absolutely lose your claim and you don't know. So you do the workers' compensation claim, and at the same time, you can and should do the claim against the at-fault party's insurance company. One of the biggest points we made, Brad, in the show that's going to air today is the fact that, the insurance company for the at-fault party can't say, well, we're not going to pay you. Wait a minute. We're not going to pay you anything because you already recovered from workers' compensation. So why would we pay you? Why should we pay you?
Right. As a matter of fact, the law pretty much provides for and allows the workers' comp insurance carrier to seek that money also from the at-fault party. It all comes back to, let's just face it, the at-fault party's got responsibilities, and the at-fault party has caused injuries to people, and the at-fault party needs to be responsible for those injuries. That comes back to the question as to whether or not the at-fault party is getting sufficient insurance. And I'm kind of taking away from what your topic is, Gary, but I still have many, many people calling me that have, for one reason or another, and I understand money can be tight, I understand budgets can be tight, but they've waived their med pay and they've waived their uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage. And for those people, they're lucky if they end up having a work comp claim as a result of their injuries if they've been hurt by somebody who has no insurance.
Right, because you can recover from workers' comp because you're injured on the job for some of your damages, but not all of your damages. And we use a good example of medical bills and expenses. You're injured on the job. You have to go to the work comp doctors. Can you go to your own doctor simultaneously? Listen to our show. What happens when you go to the work comp specially hired doctors? What happens then? You can listen to our show. Obviously, we can't cover every detail here. What damages is not paid by workers' comp, or not paid by workers' comp, that are paid by the at-fault party's insurance company? So all of a sudden, you got a very easy transaction that seems easy on the face of it, as lawyers like to say, at first blush. And then it becomes a tangled cobweb, and you have to learn how to navigate the insurance maze. But you can do it. You can win that war. And we show you how today at 10 o'clock on KOA. Joining us live right now is Howard. Good morning, Howard from Parker. How are you? Howard, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can now. What's going on?
Thank you for taking my call. Business question.
Sure.
Have an ex-employee. I own a contracting business. And this employee was caught selling a job, specifically an excavation, to a homeowner. The homeowner paid him directly. He, in turn, paid the subcontractor directly. I found out about all that. It was my lead. I generated the lead. It was my customer. One of the jobs was $3,000 that he did. Another one was about $4,500. The customers gave me copies of the canceled checks showing his name. So it is clearly theft. What is my recourse, and what are the statutes of limitations?
Okay, and what? When did this happen first, Howard, and then we'll be glad to get into it with you?
About 18 months ago.
Okay, 18 months ago. All right, so And I can see why you would feel it was theft. I'll tell you what, if you turn it in, I don't know if you've turned it in to the police or called the police or the detectives, but in this type of situation, what you're describing to me is egregious, but in this type of situation, usually, and we've done this before, usually the detectives or the DA say, well, you know, it's a civil dispute. We're not going to get involved in it. Yeah, I understand, Howard, that you think it's theft, but it's a civil dispute, so have a nice day. As opposed to embezzlement, right directly out of your account, forgery of a check, that sort of thing, a clearer-cut situation, a clearer-cut case. Do you have civil rights and remedies against this person? Yes, of course. And I would ask you the question, you don't have a written contract with this employee, Howard?
There are no employment agreements except there are provisions for non-solicitation in our agreement of we have a statement of understanding.
Right.
Because we're an at-will state, people
right.
who come to work for us sign this statement.
Okay.
And it states clearly that there is not to be any, there's a non-solicitation, there's confidentiality, there are a lot of things in this agreement that are covered.
All right, a couple more questions.
I just wonder how much. Okay, go ahead.
No, a couple more questions, and we'll answer. We'll get into it. So, did this employee do this basically on your time, your nickel, your? I know it was your lead, but your time, your nickel. I mean,
He was wearing my uniform. He visited the customer in my clearly marked vehicle. The only thing he didn't do that identifies me is the paperwork. He wrote his own, which I have copies of.
Well, you definitely have causes of action.
When did you discover it? One is going to be the question of discovery and when you should have discovered, okay? So what's your discovery time? Have you known about it for the last 18 months? I'm presuming you fired the employee.
I did.
Okay, and
I've known about it for about 14 months.
Okay. You could be right up against statute of limitations because in some cases it could be a year, in other cases it could be 2 years, which said as far as in your contract, you said you do have a written contract, right?
Well, a statement of understanding.
Okay, as far as
the relationship with the employee, I have a statement of understanding, yes.
Okay, and when you say a statement of written understanding, it's a written document though, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was given to him identifying the terms under which he was supposed to carry out his work, right?
Correct. And it was signed prior. It was signed immediately after the offer of the position was made.
Right.
So before he did any work for us, this document was in place.
And what I would assume is he submitted to you false documents as far as what he was doing, what the jobs were, what was happening with the money.
Yes, he did.
So, you know, you can also put this under a fraud, which is going to give you 3-year statute of limitations. You've got time to go after this guy, and to get your money. When you say he got the jobs of $3,500 and $4,000, that's $7,500, I'm not certain what you do, but what would have been your normal profit out of that? Just kind of an idea of it.
Approximately 40%.
Okay, so you've got a $2,000-$3,000 case. So you know this is a small claims case, which I'm happy to work with you off the air and on a way to go after him. The question I would ask you is, do you believe that there's that he'd be judgment proof? Do you believe you'd be able to get something from this person? What do you believe would be available?
That I don't know for sure.
Well, I tell you, my take on this whole situation is I'm incensed as you are. Let's see, this gentleman's got your uniform on. He's out there on the job site. It's your lead, your customer. He takes it away from you. So to me, that's just outright fraud. I think under that argument, you're okay on the statute of limitations. But forget about your statement of understanding. Throw it away for a second. Forget about it. I mean, he's there with your uniform, your job, circumventing your business on your time. You're paying him. He needs to be sued. That's how I feel about it.
Sued in a civil matter or in a small claims matter?
Well, okay, so I think in a small claims matter, because it's easier, there's no formal rules of evidence, you tell your story. But Just because it's easier doesn't mean you shouldn't go in there with documentation, as we said many times. If you go to small claims court, you should. Howard, that's where you would be. If you go to small claims court, you need the documentation, even though you're in, quote, small claims court, and it's informal.
Understand, civil and small claims are the same. I would go after the guy. You know, I would include a civil theft. I'm worried about you being past statute of limitations on that. I would look for fraud, and I'd look for some punitive damages. And with those claims, I would try to get a little more than more money than what you lost on the jobs, the 40%. And the reason is because this is the type of case that I think most people hearing it, and based on what you've told us, would be saying, we need to build in protections so that this doesn't happen again. We need to make this person an example. We need to let people know you can't go stealing jobs and doing jobs in their own name. This happens a lot in the world where people are selling different items, or they're doing jobs and they do them on side jobs and actually steal from their employer.
I got more to tell you, Howard. Listen, can you give Kevin your information? And we'd be glad to give you a call, because when you go into court, you need to be able to understand if the judge says, well, why are you here? Well, civil theft, that's one statute of limitations. Fraud, that's another one. So you need to be educated or primed on that particular part of the law. Can you do that?
Happy to.
Hang
okay,
on.
Thank you for the call.
Thank
Howard.
You.
We appreciate it. We're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we are here to help you. Don't forget about our new injury show. It's on KOA every 10 o'clock Saturday morning, 10 to 11, 1 hour injury show. Today we're talking about being injured on the job, claiming against the at-fault party's insurance company, and workers' compensation. Bell and Pollock, champions of the people. Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, 303-713-8255. We're here to answer all your questions, 713-8255. Joining us live right now is Eric. Good morning, Eric. Caitlin's, how are we
doing today?
Good.
Doing good.
Listen, we got some specials we're going to run for the rest of the week. You can come by all this week and get these specials. We'll start with that breakfast special. Now, we're doing what we call our Carne Adobada Mile High. Now, that Carne Adobada is a slow-roasted pork. We do that in our signature red chili, made right here on the premises. That's a mile-high pile of hash browns, golden brown hash browns, with that Carne Adobada on there. We're going to top that off with your choice of that red or green chili, both scratch-made, by the way. Choice of two eggs of your style, toast tortilla or pancakes on the side. I always go with the side with the pancakes. Can't beat those. They're buttermilk-made, scratch-made, out of this world. And then that lunch special for the rest of the week is going to be our Boulder chicken sandwich. Now, we're going to charbroil the chicken breast. We're going to put that on toasted multigrain. We're going to load that up with cream cheese, sunflower seeds, fresh cucumbers, house-made guacamole, sprouts. Get that going. You can get a side of homemade chips or waffle-cut fries with that. Homemade chips are out of this world. I tend to like those myself. But you can get either one of those on there for the lunch special for the rest of the week. And then don't forget, every Monday and every Friday from 11 to 2, we do an all-you-can-eat taco burrito buffet. It is all-you-can-eat. It's only $8.45 for the price. That actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in that price. Can't beat that. No deck today, guys. Sorry, can't squeak that one out. But we do have crafts and mimosas for $12.50. We do have flat screens and sports everywhere. Come on down. Check us out. Bring your kids. Good family place. Good place to get something to eat to start off and get your errands done. Come on down to Caitlin's and check us out.
I'll see you down there, Eric. I'm coming down for the pancakes, though, buddy.
Absolutely. We got a variety of pancakes to choose from. They're all scratch-made, and you can't beat them.
Where are you located?
We are 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, guys, that's one block east of Color Boulevard, and that is the Glendale Shopping Center. Come and check us out.
See you,
Eric. All right, Eric. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us 303-713-8255. 713-8255. Tomorrow morning in the Denver Post, the Bell and Pollock Injury Blog. Could you survive the night in your car in a blizzard in the mountains? Well, the injury blog for Bell and Pollock tomorrow morning in the Denver Post tells you exactly how to do it. And I'll bet you're going to be surprised. Do you know what a fluorescent flag is? Fluorescent flag. Read our post, our blog tomorrow morning in the Denver Post. We'll be glad to share that information with you. Dan from Thornton right now is calling. Good morning, Dan. What can we do for you?
I'm having a little trouble with getting a title back, a car title back from a title loan company.
Okay.
It's kind of like disproving a negative. I took out a loan on the car, a title loan, a couple years ago. Was making payments on it. At the end of, well, not really at the end, but all of a sudden, they didn't really have a website or an email address to get a hold of anybody with, just a phone number. I would call, I would make my monthly payments, and then all of a sudden, the phone number was disconnected. I tracked them down. They were a company out of California. I tracked them down by their legal name. They weren't in the Better Business Bureau. They weren't even in the state of California registered as a company. I don't necessarily have a problem driving my car because, you know, they would put an ignition switch off or something if you missed a payment. And I haven't made any payments because I haven't been able to get a hold of anybody, but I also kind of want to get my title back if this company is gone.
All right. Have you paid off the car? Any more payments due on the car?
No, I haven't. I don't know if I've fulfilled the contract or not. Like I said, I made payments for about a year, and then the company just kind of disappeared.
All right. Well, if you paid off the car, there's a couple of things that you can do, one of which is the lien holder, once you paid off the car, has 10 business days after receipt of the payment to release the lien, and that means you get it off your title and get you a clear title. The other thing that you can do is make an application for a duplicate title to show that the lien is released. Problem is you're going to be able to have to prove or show that you paid off the title. But if the company's out of business and it looks like it's no phone, and that's unbelievable, but it is what it is, so there's no phone, no way to contact them. But if you're going to apply for a duplicate title, they're going to say, did you pay it off? Show me how you paid this off. I don't know if you have your canceled checks. I don't know how you paid that. But once the car's been paid off, they have 10 business days to remove the lien. If they don't, you can file an application for a duplicate title, and there's probably a $20 fee. And if that doesn't work, you can file a lawsuit to get it done.
Well, my concern is, it sounds like you said that you haven't been making the payments to this lender because the payments are coming back.
There's no way to contact them to get the payments made to them. Yeah, correct.
Okay. When you took out the loan, did it have within the loan papers where payment was to be made?
Yeah, it was a company based out of San Diego. I had the address. I tried contacting them. I've gotten no response. I've tried contacting them by phone, by certified letter, by email. They did have an email address. I've looked the business up in the California clerk and recorder or Department of Revenue. The company doesn't exist as far as San Diego or California or San Diego is concerned.
All right.
I have really no. I mean, when I go to the title company, it's like disproving a negative. I have no way to show them that the company doesn't exist. I have no way to show them that the title is that I've done what I need to do. Excuse me. All I have is the car, which is great because I can still use it, but I want my title back.
Right. So you don't have the title, but one critical legal question, sounds mundane detail, but it's critical. You know, how is the lien, and you probably don't know this, but how is the lien listed on the title? I mean, what company? If you're dealing with XYZ Company in San Diego and the lien on the title is ABC Company, different legal solution.
I understand, and I believe it's the same company name on the title, but that's something I could look at.
All right, well, let's go back. You said that you haven't been making payment for quite some time.
No, I haven't.
All right, and you said they did put a device on the car to be able to disable the car in the event you didn't make the payments.
Correct, and that's never been turned on.
Okay, and do you have a way, do you know of a way to get that off your car?
it was installed at Best Buy, but I need a title to get it taken off.
Right, because nobody's going to take it off until you have the title, until you have proof that it should be coming off.
Right.
Okay, and as part of the transaction, the company had you go to Best Buy, and they were involved in you getting it put on, right?
Correct.
So have you talked to Best Buy to see if they know what's going on with this company?
I have. They don't know.
They've disappeared also.
Yes.
This might take a court action.
It might.
I think this is going to take court action. We got to talk to you after or this week, because this may take having to get a court order directing Best Buy to take that off your car. I mean, the point of it is you have nowhere to make the payment. And I understand, you know, you want to make the payment, the money's there, and these people probably have the right to get their money. But the problem is that in the meantime, you're at risk that anybody who for some reason is able to control that device could shut your car off on you.
Right. And you know what I say all the time, I'm going to say again, pretend like you're the judge in this case. Pretend like, Dan, you're in front of the judge, and you're the judge right now. And you're saying, I want to get my title back. What are the questions the court has? The court has questions like, well, did you pay all your payments? Like, can you show me proof that you've sent certified letters to this people and they don't respond? Like, can you show me how many payments you have left? Like, can you show me the payments that you have made and the efforts you've undergone in writing to contact these people? Like, can you show me your efforts you engaged in with Best Buy to get this matter resolved? So, I agree with Brad, this is probably going to involve a court action, but we can't just waltz into court and sing the song without preparation. Are you with me there?
I understand. I do have a question about that. What state would the court action be in? Do I have to go to San Diego to get this done? Can I do it from here?
Do you still have all your paperwork, right?
Yeah, I do.
And, you know, unless otherwise stated in the paperwork, the transaction occurred here. So I think they submitted themselves under the long-arm jurisdiction to this court, unless the paperwork has a chain, says something different. We need to see that paperwork because we can help you with that.
Well, Dan, the other thing is, yes, you can sue them right here. And sometimes if it says, well, any action brought into this paperwork will be in the state of California, you can still sue them here. They're going to have to remove it and change it because the way they've treated you is not correct, not proper. Can I put you on hold and give Kevin your information and we will help you?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold, give Kevin your information. And Dan, thank you for the call. All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Don't forget about the show that follows our show, the Consumer Real Estate Show. Barry and Larry, the Consumer Real Estate Show. They're on the side of the consumers. They have a lot of information to share with you, including my favorite provisions in a real estate contract, the notice to inspect and the notice to correct. Bell and Pollock. We'll be right back. Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. 303-713-8255. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. Our injury show, hour-long show in KOA every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 in the morning. Today we're talking about being injured on the job, in the course and scope of your employment. What does that mean for you? We break it all down for you. You can and should have a workers' compensation claim. What does that mean? Who are your friends? Who are your enemies? What do you need to do? You can and should at the same time simultaneously have a claim against the insurance company for the at-fault party, the one who creamed you and changed your life and sent you to the ER and conservative modalities of treatment. How does that work? How do the two work together? What's the Jorgensen case? Listen today at 10 o'clock and you'll find out and then you'll know. Join us live is Rodeo Doc. Good morning, Rodeo Doc.
Good morning, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Doing good. How you all doing? How you doing?
Well, I'm doing awesome. I went to the National Western last weekend and had my first opportunity to stop at Caitlin's.
Did you really?
Yeah, I'll be darned. Did. And you know what? It was wonderful. I had the huevos with carne adobada, and it was completely delicious.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Incredible.
Buddy.
Thank you for that.
I go down there a lot, Rodeo Duck. I'm sorry I didn't see you down there.
Yeah.
Well, it was probably not quite after the show. We were there around probably 11:30-ish or so. It was super. Just a great recommendation from you guys.
Good. Thanks.
Thank you.
I did want to touch a little bit on CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And there's a new study out in the journal Brain, and the title is Triggered by Hits to Head, Not Just Concussions. This is an important distinction. The article, and most of these articles, never really touch on what happens in car crashes to the brain, and that's unfortunate. But it does deal with vets and athletes.
Right.
And this particular condition is of great concern because the problems from it don't show up for a long time after the incident, but it causes degenerative brain disease, cognitive mood changes, behavioral problems, etc. And what they found was 20% of these athletes exhibited signs of CTE with no history of concussion. None.
Zero.
No history.
Wow.
And pardon me. What they actually did was to study 18-age athletes that had passed away, and four of them had suffered brain injuries recently, four hadn't, and the difference between the two groups were clear. One of those teenagers, had signs of early CTE, and the condition is considered a silent killer because it does slowly destroy your brain. And this is just serious business, and it needs to be considered in car crashes and how we, I guess probably from your guys' side, make allowances for future care and how we as practitioners approach these patients and not just write them off as head cases, no pun intended.
Right. You know, and that we see that every day. And one of the things that incenses me is we've got you have somebody that has a head injury, traumatic brain injury, a concussion, and they always say, well, you went to the emergency room, your Glasgow Coma Scale was a perfect 15, so you're okay. But when you take the depositions of these defense neuropsychologists, and there's one in Colorado that's infamous, when you take their deposition and you want to talk about CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, when you want to talk about that, they say, oh, you're talking about the NFL. You're talking about that. That's much different because they have repeated hits to their head. This person, this car accident, couldn't have suffered a head injury. And so they defend it that way. But what you talked about were teenage, in the study, teenagers. And, you know, Colorado does have the Youth Sports Concussion Act. You know, it was signed on March 29, 2011. And it was the Jake Snakenberg Youth Sports Concussion Act. And if you go to the website of Bell and Pollock, championsofthepeople.com, you'll see a whole presentation on the youth concussion statute. If your child's engaged in football, sports, soccer, volleyball, any sport, even recreational leagues, it applies, and you need to know. The show is right there on our website.
Hey, Rodeo Doc, you know, CTE, normally you can't really diagnose it without upon death. Obviously.
That's just it. That's one of the major problems. And, of course, you get the insight begins to come years later when you see these significant mood alterations, behavioral problems, that kind of stuff. You begin to go, well, I wonder if.
Right. And so what you got to look at is these symptoms. Like you said, the mood alterations it can lead to suicidal thoughts and substance abuse and depression and even short-term memory loss. But, you know, have you seen anything out there that talks about how many hits we're talking about? You know, we know now that you just brought up is that it doesn't have to be such a hit that it causes concussion symptoms. It can just be a hit.
Yeah, just the hits.
Right.
Just the hits. And we know that in motor vehicle crashes that the brain gets sloshed around, and very frequently there's no loss of consciousness. And I think, you know, in that setting, what I see in my practice is that these people exhibit symptoms that are concussion-like without the actual concussion being there. And as practitioners, I think we have to take that in consideration and act on it.
Sure. And, you know, but what do you do? You know, it's my understanding CTE starts with a protein of tau or TAU.
Tau protein. Yeah. It actually starts when the trauma occurs, the capillaries in the brain are affected and they leak.
Okay.
And as those capillaries leak, this tau protein forms around that leakage. And, you know, for lack of better words, it becomes like a little Pac-Man in the brain, beginning to destroy the brain tissue around where that that leakage and that tau protein buildup begins.
And really, you know, that can happen with any kind of blow to the head, can it?
Certainly.
When you start taking into consideration in a car crash, it seems to me like you said, professionals such as you have to be looking for the symptoms we just talked about.
Exactly so. And sometimes they're subtle, and in a case that we share, teenage girl, three accidents, two of them close together, one of them significant. And she's had the symptoms.
Well, okay, Rody Doc, you know, I we're going to have to go here. We go up against the wall in time. But I want to say, I have used this example in jury trial. I have taken to my closing argument in jury trial a Tupperware canister full of Jell-O. And I've shaken it right in front of the jury. And people don't understand that's exactly what happens to your brain.
Exactly so. You guys have a blessed weekend.
You too, okay, Rody Doc. Great call. Thank you very much.
We appreciate your call. Eva, I'm sorry we couldn't get to you, but we'll answer your questions off the air. James, same thing for you. We appreciate all of your calls. Don't forget about our website, championsofthepeople.com. Don't forget about our show today, 10 to 11, a one-hour injury show every Saturday morning on KOA, 850 a.m. We spent the time to do this to give you the information you need. Today we're talking about workers' comp injuries, on-the-job injuries, at the same time you're in a car crash. What are your rights? Bell and Pollock, because we are your champions of the people.